Welcome to SROA Soundboard, a podcast for radiation oncology administrators. I'm Tammy McCausland. I'm joined today by Deb Crow, a certified life and leadership coach and best-selling author of the book, The Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook. Welcome, Deb.
Thanks so much for having me, Tammy.
Can you share a bit about your background and how your career brought you to this point?
Ooh, we're starting off deep and wide. I love it. My background is in neuroscience, and I did my post-secondary education in disability management. So I started my company in 1990, and I looked after people who had been catastrophically injured, either in an automobile accident or a workplace accident. So I would see things on a regular basis of brain injury at all levels, spinal cord injury, severe orthopedic injury, or sometimes all of the above. And then I also ventured into doing some pediatric brain injury because there wasn't many neurotrauma case managers doing that and helping those little people get back to life and back to school. And then things changed for me about 14 years ago when I was asked by an adjudicator to take on 5 short-term disability claims for 5 executives. There were 2 CEOs and 3 VPs, and they were all off on short-term disability for stress. And from the time I got those claims to 10 months later, I lost them all to cancer. They all landed up in our local hospice where I volunteered. And I found that to be a very serendipitous, aligned moment. And I was asked by my own coach at that time what I was going to do with this gift that I had just been given. So I took some time to grieve and decide what I was going to do and became a certified life and leadership coach. And I haven't lost an executive since and really enjoy being in this space. The case manager shows up on a regular basis. So it's just so interesting to me. And I talk about it in the book, how our life is really our leadership journey and all the transferable skills that we bring and pack up and carry on into whatever we're doing in present day. And that's where I'm at today.
That's an amazing background. And my next question may overlap a bit with what you just shared, but what was the inspiration behind writing your book, The Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook?
It was sitting in my heart since I started my company in 1990. I was 24. And I just kept journaling and writing. And then eventually when Windows came, it became Word documents. And I think the catalyst for me was I finally decided to be courageous and write it. I had the time with COVID. And when I dumped all of the files into a folder in Google Drive, I realized that I had already written the book. And it was more of just the flow of the book, the chapter sequence, doing some academic research. So I gave myself 18 months. I still kind of pinch myself that it's done. But the biggest meaning for me is I've always been a heart-centered leader as I look back on my life and leadership journey. I was told different academically in the workplace before I started my own business, even when I'm working to this day with some clients, that it doesn't have a place in business acumen. And that's a myth that I definitely want to debunk, and I do it on a daily basis. I think it's what we're missing in business acumen. And when I look at the businesses that have really navigated COVID well, there's heart-centered leaders at the helm.
So what does it mean to be a heart-centered leader, and why is the heart missing in leadership?
So heart-centered leader, my definition, is honoring your connection with people. And that means doing things for the goodness of being a decent human being and not looking for or anticipating reciprocity. It's missing in business acumen because a lot of organizations and their leaders and executive teams have a very top-bottom approach, top-down approach. And while I understand business acumen, being an entrepreneur for 33 years, I understand that we have fiduciary outcomes that we want to achieve. There's metrics, there's things to be analyzed, there's KPIs. but I want to invert the fraction of profit over people. And that's what's missing. You have to put people before the profit, and then all of your metrics, your KPIs, anything that has a fiduciary element attached to it, it's going to happen because it's the people that are driving the business acumen. And it needs to be put back into business acumen. And I don't know why or where we've lost it along the way. And I understand the stature and the responsibility of leadership programs that are out there. But I know that the bandwidth is opening, Tammy, because I'm teaching at my local college here in London, Ontario. And people are wanting this, especially after what we've just navigated over the last 3 years as global citizens.
So let me ask you a question. You emphasize the importance of people over profits. And in the pandemic, we had companies had to kind of lean in to help people for their safety, even in healthcare. And there was more remote work. But coming now that we're kind of, I guess, mostly out of the officially out of the pandemic, we have companies pushing back and saying, no, you need to come back to work. And so hybrid is becoming more common as opposed to complete remote. So how in this kind of environment where we're reverting back a little bit, can people push back and say, or companies say, we need to do the people over profits?
I think they need to take more of an education and advocacy approach. Mm-hmm. And you know, to be blunt, putting a bum back in a seat inside a building is extrinsic. That doesn't mean productivity is going to go up because you're coming back to your cubicle or your office. So it's having room to have a conversation, to put intrinsic, to put the value of people first. And everyone's navigating their own journey in life. And some people are still not doing well. And we're on the other side of COVID with, you know, the fear that it might be returning. I have a conversation to ask why. Why is it important that that person needs to physically be back in the office? And maybe opening up a meaningful aligned conversation to allow those leaders to sit in the observer's chair and see life through that specific employee's point of view, vantage point, if you will. And for me, it's led to some beautiful conversations. And it always lands back on what we just talked about, putting that employee first over the profits. If we let the employee thrive and they're doing well at home and they're not in the office or they have to be home for another reason, and you look at the population globally, the largest population is the baby boomers. So there's a lot of people in Gen X, which is my era of birth and where we're at. We're the next biggest. We have children, young children, and aging parents, and we're kind of being compacted in the middle and then trying to perform and do our careers or run businesses. So I think when we can bring the extrinsic and marry life and leadership, and I talk about it in my book, life shows up at work and work shows up at life. That's why emergencies aren't planned. And these leaders need to have a bit more heart-centeredness to realize the work can be done. And I think the millennials are really doing a great job at this. It may not be inside a cubicle or an office, and it may not be between 9 and 5, but the work gets done. It gets done exceptionally well. Metrics are being made. KPIs are being achieved. They're shifting the traditional 9 to 5 in the office all the time model. I don't think it's a bad thing. I always see it as an opportunity to have a beautiful conversation.
Interesting. In your book, you emphasize leading with empathy, authenticity, and purpose. What does that look like?
We just had a great example in the last question. So empathy, not sympathy. How can you step into your coworker or someone on your team's world to really understand, be present, listen attentively for what's going on so that you can adjust in a heart-centered way to accommodate what they may or may not need so that your needs are being met as an employer or an organization at large, you know? And being heart-centered is, again, being present, not thinking about what you haven't done, what you still have to do. When we're not paying attention to someone, we are missing out on a beautiful opportunity to connect in a different way. And heart-centered as a whole, being there and not thinking about what's in it for you, whether it be a work task, something that's scheduled, something that wasn't done, just really being present human to human. So taking the B2B model, whichever way you want to look at it, and changing it to H2H, human to human.
That's a really great point, human to human, because I think most people, some people think like that, but most people probably just think business as usual. Segueing into the next question, could you give an example or two of prominent leaders whom you think epitomize heart-centered leadership?
Yes, I can. I have a chapter in my book where I talk about Mike Sievert. He's the CEO of T-Mobile in the States, your largest cell carrier. It's a really interesting story. So when John Legere was the CEO, he approached Mike, who was the COO at the time, and really felt that he possessed heart-centeredness and wanted to give him the shot of being the CEO, and led him and mentored him for 5 years. Mike has taken over. He's navigated COVID. I love watching him when he does his podcasts online. I did a retreat for them in the middle of COVID, and I was so taken back that he sent me a personal message, and he said, please tell me that everything you talked about is going to be sent to us, because we all couldn't write fast enough. He's genuine. He knows that you can take 30 seconds or a minute to send a message and thank somebody. And I just think he's the epitome of a heart-centered leader. He's not afraid to make a mistake. He's able to fail forward. He's authentic. He's vulnerable. He's empathetic. And he loves people. And it's just a joy to watch him. And I was honored to put him in my book to really show that a large organization like that, especially in telecommunications, it is doable. But it's like anything else, Tammy. You have to work at it and not become complacent. Another great example is Reed Hastings from Netflix. I talk about him in my book. He loves to talk about intuition. And there is a leadership term in leadership language called intuition management. And he grew Netflix with his gut and with intuition. And he said, if it doesn't feel good or look good, it probably isn't. And he really mentors and fosters his leaders to lead with that, and demonstrates, you know, such a great example, because he does it. And, you know, when we're listening to our gut and we tap into that sixth sense, which they call proprioception, it's how most C-suite leaders lead in their day. They did a great study out of Harvard. I think it was the fall of 2021. And 74% of C-suites use their intuition because they have a tsunami of information coming at them in any given day. The sector doesn't matter. The title doesn't matter. And they use their intuition to either delegate or have an effective decision-making strategy.
For the leaders with whom your book resonates, how can they transition to heart-centered leadership, especially if that's not the dominant leadership style in their organization?
They have to be bold. They have to be brave. They have to be courageous. They need to model some of the heart-centered leadership qualities that I talk about in my book, the biggest one being trustworthy, approachable. They need to have the ability to fail forward, model self-care, all the things that kind of have a negative connotation because it's never made its way into business acumen. So it's the ones who are willing to stand and say, it's okay to not be okay. And here's a psychological safe space. Let's talk about this. The more fireside chats I do and keynote speaking that I do, Tammy, I've had so many leaders at all different levels, from director to C-suite, say, we have forgot to sit in a room and talk to each other. To say, how are things going? How are you feeling? Not how are you thinking or how are you doing? How are you feeling? How can I help you? We've lost the nuance of intrinsically being present with one another. And as much as I get told on the daily that it's common sense, my answer's simple. You're absolutely right. Why is it not your common practice?
That's a very good point. Do you think the prevalence of technology has been a key problem or a reason why we've moved away from this connection that you're talking about that would make for better leadership and better workplaces?
I do. I think the technology is a blessing and a curse. I mean, I love it for all that it does in making our lives easier, but we now have the attention span of like 6 seconds, which is less than a goldfish. And I'm not being facetious. We have so much information coming at us. We don't sometimes take the time to think anymore. We don't take the time to feel. We don't think or have the time to be, because technology's got us on this hamster wheel of doing, 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 doing. And then everyone wonders why they can't calm their mind or why they don't have thought leadership, white space in their calendar anymore. And it's just, it's too fast paced, and we're losing all the beauty of intrinsicness in our life and our leadership, because we got to do this, we got to do that. Everything's, you know, attached to this device that people are really having difficulty, and it's become an addiction for people.
What are two or three actionable strategies administrators can use to be heart-centered leaders? You kind of touched on it already, but if you could do it in a nutshell, what would you recommend to people?
I think the top one is modeling self-care. I look at corporate wellness much different than most people. And I think what COVID taught us, and if I'm speaking directly to your leaders and administrators, corporate wellness used to be mitigating short-term disability claims and getting people back to work, or mitigating them to long-term and getting them off the books. Corporate wellness now is people over profit, and not mitigating, but having space in your leadership to make sure all your people are doing okay, deep and wide, at all levels. And modeling self-care is showing that it's okay to take a day off. It's okay to have a sick day. If you're not well, don't come into work. And I don't think we need to put an exclamation mark after that, because COVID set a completely different precedence. If I'm sitting here looking at my heart-centered leadership qualities poster, which I want to share with all of your listeners, striving to mentor. Those administrators as leaders need to show that their worth and worthiness and their identity or their title doesn't affect their level of self-awareness. They're always going to strive to mentor to the best of their ability, but allow the room for imperfection. There is no perfection. If you tell me you're perfect or you're an expert, then you've just indicated to me that you're choosing to not continue to grow and learn and lead on a daily basis and evolve as a heart-centered leader. I think another one that's really, really big is owning your character flaws and adding in a spice of candor and a dash of humor. There's nothing I love more than when I'm in the middle of a talk and I have a vulnerable moment. I'm a middle-aged woman. I forget things. I can be in the middle of a sentence and be like, I just forgot my third point. I'm going to circle around and come back. And I get the look of, me too. Hmm. We're not meant to be perfect doings. We are meant to be imperfection as human beings. And when we open up that vulnerability and we can continue with three of those traits or qualities that I shared, doesn't that make you more approachable and heart-centered? Wouldn't you want to approach someone knowing that it's a safe space?
It's a good point. Lots of good points. Every great book has aha moments that readers connect with. What are some that in your book that people have shared with you?
So I don't want to share the two favorite chapters because we're on a bit of a roll and there's a consistency, but a doctor that read my book called me and he said, your book is like no other leadership book, because this is what I've done. 1/3 of my book is my memoir, which is my life and leadership journey that we talked about. And at the end of each chapter, there's a full circle life moment to tie everything together and how it aligned with heart-centered leadership. The next 1/3 is all the research and academic reviews that I did in interviews, again, and how it aligns with heart-centered leadership, keeping intrinsic in the forefront. And then the last third is my heart-centered leadership model and all of my original work. So it's a culmination of storytelling intertwined with business acumen, academic research, and my own thought leadership, which was really scary to put out there, but people are really loving it. They like the end of the chapter, the full circle life moments. They love the sequencing of the chapters and how I did it. And we didn't need another leadership book out there with a ton of academic research. So I wanted to bring something fresh and new and present and still have the credibility of the academic research to back my stories and my points and my own original work on heart-centered leadership.
That's awesome. What's next for you?
Well, I'm literally just exhaling as we had a laugh together before you hit record. I'm embracing the joy and the journey. I'm embracing that this moment is finally here. I still look at my book and flip through my book, Tammy, and it's like, I can't believe it's done. I think my next book is going to be a children's book. They are tomorrow's leaders. I want to hone in on the 9 to 12 age group. I want to get them a few years after social development is done and before adolescence really starts. I think that's a sweet spot to really get that population. I think I can have a lot of fun. And who doesn't want to sit and interview a bunch of 9 to 12 year olds from around the world? That would be just, you know, super fun. I'm doing a lot of fireside chats within organizations to talk about one of the questions that you asked me, like, how do we implement this in our organization? How can we go from having an unhealthy, toxic culture to something that's healthy and vibrant and that people want to love working here, whether it's remote, hybrid, in-person, or a combination of all three? And nothing gives me more joy than to put my book in the hands of a leadership team, which I've been really blessed. There's been 20 to 25 people, but I love the informality of a fireside chat. I think it's one way of really softly integrating an intrinsic approach into business acumen. I've had great feedback and getting back on the speaker circuit next year, which I'm really excited about because I haven't really been out since before COVID.
That's amazing. Well, it's been great talking with you today, Deb. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
For more information, visit www.sroa.org.